Hello, I'm Peter Anthony Holder. This is number 0300, the Stuff File program with, you know, me, Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0300. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, fantasy sports expert Tony Cotillo is back on the show to talk about the NFL scandal Deflategate. Will the outcome tarnish Brady and the Patriots?
Without a doubt, both of them will definitely be tarnished. It's unfortunate because, in my own opinion, I feel as though Troy Vincent came out and issued a statement about Tom Brady and the Patriots' actions taking a big blow to the integrity of the game, which I think is kind of unfair a little bit to basically symbolize it the same meaning as the PED scandal in baseball. So I don't think it's as steep, but it will be tarnished the same way. And every record, every Super Bowl paragraph mentioning Tom Brady and New England Patriots, we'll definitely have an asterisk next to their name on the Deflategate.
Tech expert Chet Davis has ideas on how to use your technology when you're on vacation.
A lot of people, the easiest way, to be honest with you, is go and have Wi-Fi only. Go into airplane mode and then go back in and turn on Wi-Fi. And that way, you're going to be able to connect to the internet if your hotel, if the restaurant you're visiting, you know, the area where you are, maybe there's a public library, some other hotspot, airport, they allow connectivity so you can get your email, you can log on and check things without worrying about cellular charges.
Dr. Paul Coleman says, as a society, we have to learn to stop overthinking everything.
When we overthink, what we start to do is we elevate non-essential information, less important information, to the status of something that's more important, and then we hesitate to make decisions and we slow down our ability to actually make efficient progress in our lives. So when we want to change that, part of what we have to do is we have to begin to tolerate uncertainty.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0300, well, that was me, Peter Anthony Holder. Because, you know, I do them, the guest slates, that is, about every 100 shows. So, here we are with show number 300, and here I am doing the guest slate, as it were. And hopefully we'll do another 300 shows for you over the next several years, if things work out. Hope you enjoy it. And remember, the Stuff File program, oh, I always usually thank the guest slater, don't I? Yes, thank you, Peter Anthony Holder, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know, people have been known to pilfer an item or two from work, usually small transgressions like some office supplies, such as pens and paper clips. Other people are more ambitious, like the woman who stole pounds of gold bit by bit from a jeweler she worked for. But few people's larceny is as large scale or as gross as this guy's. Over a period of 18 months, Barry Larson, which I guess is short for larceny, stole an estimated $30,000 worth of dog biscuits from the Purina pet food plant that he worked for. So, was he selling dog biscuits on the outside? Is there a black market for hot pet food? And how was he getting all of those dog biscuits out of the plant anyway? Well, this is the part that might shock you. He wasn't. He was eating them. Here's a quote. "We noticed a few months ago that something was wrong with our dog biscuit production." That's a quote from Purina spokesperson Keith Schopp. "When we checked the quality, or quantity rather, of ingredients that was used in the production and the number of biscuits that were produced, the numbers just didn't add up. We began installing more security cameras at various strategic locations throughout the factory, and we were finally able to identify the problem. Mr. Larson, who worked in the quality check sector, was eating almost half of the biscuits that went by him. It's sort of like a bad Lucy and Ethel sketch, isn't it? Yeah. To account for the losses, Mr. Larson must have ingested nearly 3,000 dog biscuits per day during his work hours. I couldn't eat 3,000 biscuits of any kind, never mind dog biscuits, per day. But anyway, there was a good reason, he says, for his voraciousness. According to police captain Brian Tobin, Purina has provided us with hours of video evidence in which we see the suspect smoked drugs on his work site and then eat hundreds of dog biscuits. The images are a little bit disturbing, but very conclusive in terms of evidence. We proceeded with Mr. Larson's arrest for 15 counts of petty theft and found him to be in possession of 10 grams of cannabis. Larson's ex-girlfriend, Patricia Nelson, told a reporter that she was aware of his addictions to both cannabis and dog biscuits, and that she had actually left him when she had found out. Every night he came back from work with a really horrible breath, she said. One day I came back from work earlier than usual and surprised him with his mouth full of dog biscuits. I was so disgusted that I packed my bags and left. Yeah. Don't they advertise that dog biscuits are supposed to be good for their breath? Anyway, I wonder how much he'll enjoy prison food. I mean, he has an easy-to-please palate, as it is. Moving right along, North Palm Beach, Florida police responded to a report of a suspicious vehicle parked behind Mavericks High School, which is for at-risk students. When they arrived, 45-year-old Krista Morton told officers everything was okay. She was just friends with the other occupant in the vehicle in the back seat that was with her, and that person was an 18-year-old who she had picked up off the street because she just wanted to get to know him. But he said no. He was a student at the school, and Morton was his principal. Officers observed that Morton's shirt was unbuttoned enough that she was exposing her shoulders and part of her chest, and they smelled marijuana. Morton allegedly admitted that marijuana had been smoked in the car when marijuana was found on the seat. Both occupants were arrested on drug charges. Morton was released quickly, but the boy was held because he wasn't able to post bail. Yep. He was at risk, all right. You know, we've heard of teacher's pet, but we rarely hear of principal's boy toy, do we? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, forget about thrill rides. How about a shrill ride? The Window of the World theme park in China has a new attraction that some are just dying to ride. It's called Samadhi, and it's designed to give riders the sensation of being dead, cremated, and reborn. First, the visitor goes on a journey through a morgue. Next, they are placed in a casket and put on a conveyor belt for cremation, which is simulated by a sudden blast of hot air over the rider to simulate flames. The air reaches temperatures of up to 105 degrees Fahrenheit. The attraction also uses flashes of light to give the rider an authentic experience of burning. Finally, an image of a womb is projected onto the ceiling, and riders must crawl until they reach a white padded room where they are reborn. Sound fun? The ride's creators went to great lengths to make the experience as accurate as possible by visiting a real crematorium and lying inside the incinerator. Who got that job? Wow. A Window of the World is a cultural theme park instead of a regular amusement park. Other attractions featured there include replicas of France's Eiffel Tower and its Arc de Triomphe. When many riders reach the end of the experience, they are said to be drenched in sweat. Now, whether that's a result of the heat or being scared to death, well, that's kind of uncertain. Gee, you know, some people really do have a death wish, don't they? I wonder if anybody goes back on that ride a second time. Just curious. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. The NFL has lowered the boom on Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Brady has been suspended for 4 games because of the Deflategate scandal. Fantasy sports expert Tony Cotillo is back on the program to talk about that. Tony joins us on the line right now from Philadelphia. Hi, Tony.
Hey, how are you, Peter?
Fine, thanks for being on the program with us once again. So first of all, we've been following this whole Deflategate leading up to this suspension of 4 games for Tom Brady, 4 games without pay, I may add. Were you surprised by the suspension, first of all?
Actually, no. I actually thought it was going to be a longer suspension, so I'm actually surprised it's only 4 games.
What did you think he was going to get?
Well, I thought it was either, there was a lot of talk about, you know, a full season, which I didn't think he was going to get the full season, but I figured he would get 8 games and then they would appeal and they would probably wind up getting 4. So now as it stands, he'll probably wind up getting 2 after they appeal the suspension.
And that's true. They will appeal the suspension. At the time of this taping, we were talking 4 games, but of course the suspension process will come into play and that could change in the coming days. What I'd like to know is, regardless of what happens, whether it's the 4 games or 2 games or whatever takes place, and basically the $1 million plus 2 draft picks taken away from the team itself, what does this say as far as you're concerned for, first of all, the legacy of Tom Brady and also the legacy of the team, the New England Patriots?
Well, without a doubt, both will definitely be tarnished. It's unfortunate because, in my own opinion, I feel as though Troy Vincent came out and issued a statement about Tom Brady and the Patriots' actions, you know, taking a big blow to the integrity of the game, which I think is kind of unfair a little bit to basically symbolize it the same meaning as the PED scandal in baseball. So I don't think it's as steep, but it will be tarnished the same way. And every record, every Super Bowl paragraph mentioned Tom Brady and New England Patriots will definitely have an asterisk next to their name on the Deflategate.
But by the same token, do you think, generally speaking, the fans in the long run are going to be overly concerned? And I bring this up, not that I'm saying that they're, you know, they should take away their Super Bowl ring and their championship for the season. I don't expect them, and nor did I expect them to do that. But the fact that they do get to keep it and life goes on and they are this season's reigning Super Bowl champions, yes, there's a bit of a tarnish, but not a lot.
No, I mean it's not going. It's definitely going to be circumstantial, and it will be minimal at best because you know you'll still have the following out there, and you know it's not going to take away from you know all their previous accomplishments. But I think that the whole problem and the mistake in this whole investigation is, you know, there's no concrete evidence per se. Everything in that report says, you know, more probable than not, and it's all circumstantial. So I think that's one way he'll still have supporters behind him.
Well, and based on the fact that it is all circumstantial, is it a knee-jerk reaction on the league to pull a 4-game suspension? Are they really punishing Brady and the New England Patriots for what they did in this particular situation, or are they making up for transgressions by not punishing people hard enough in other situations they have been accused of in the past?
I think you hit the nail right on the head right there, because I think the Ray Rice case and what happened with all the drops and misses and you know and everything in that case was definitely you know predicated on what happened to Tom Brady. So I really do think that the NFL knew they had to do something to create more of a mainstay per se. But I also think that down the line that, you know, they'll realize that Tom Brady, you know, he is the golden boy and the Patriots are the gold standard in the NFL. So I think they had to do this just to show that nobody's above the law.
So where do we move forward from this? I mean, they sent a message to the team. They sent a message to Tom Brady, obviously. Let's not forget that there are other people, lesser people in this situation who are problematic in this case. I mean, you have a superstar football player on a superstar team who you can say gets his will in his way, assuming we go on the assumption guilty of sin. But you have equipment players or equipment people on the team who are doing the bidding of those in this case. What happens to them?
Well, they've been suspended indefinitely without pay. So, unfortunately, they will take the brunt of everything because obviously they're going to kind of be the scapegoat in this whole situation. So they've already been, they've already been banned from activities and partaking in the team. So you won't probably see them around anymore.
Do you think in the grand scheme of things, that's fair compared to what's happened to the team and Brady?
Probably not, because they all partaked in the same activity, whether, they deflated the balls, whether they, they had special emblems on them, or, they had to order a sequence and how they were handled. I mean, everybody knew about it. And I think Tom Brady, actually made this worse on himself, because there was a lot of text messages and email communications that went through him and the staff that he refused to give up in this investigation. So he almost made it seem like he was implicating himself, or he was kind of hiding something. But so I think he was a big part in how this played out also.
Okay, well, if you're saying everybody knew about it, when you say everybody, who are you referring to?
Well, it was mentioned by, Ryan Grigson, who for the Indianapolis Colts, who is the GM out there. And I mean, he obviously put that, planted that seed in the ears of the NFL when he sent the report about the deflated ball. So, and it's a shame because, New England, they probably didn't need to do that. And, and to go back a couple of steps too, we all remember Spygate. We remember the implications with New England with that as well. So that's a big reason why I think this suspension, came out the way it did, and it kind of hit New England pretty hard as well. But, everybody around the league looks at New England as they get away with what they want. As simple as Bill Belichick, he skirts the rules with the ineligible offensive lineman or the eligible player downfield. So there's certain things they have a reputation, for amongst the league. So that's the reason why I say everyone.
There is, but there is also some talk. You talk about Indianapolis in this case. There was some idea that maybe one of the Harbaughs put the idea in Indianapolis' head by saying, have somebody check the balls, because they felt that they were subjected to it in a previous game before.
Yes. And that's the hard, underlying fact in this whole investigation, is even though we do say it's circumstantial and there's no concrete evidence, I mean, these NFL football players, whether it be running backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers, we all know that they have to be able to feel a difference. There was numerous veteran players that come out that said that there's definitely a way to feel a difference. So you're right. I mean, if Harbaugh knew it, those players knew it. A lot of people, I think, know it. Some people, I guess, didn't think it was a big deal, but others obviously did.
Okay, everybody could feel the difference. All the players on the league, in the team, you say, can feel the difference, who handled the ball. After every play, doesn't the referee handle the ball? Can't he feel the difference?
I would think so. I mean, they do. When it rains, they wipe them off. They spot the ball at the line. Each team has their own ball, so obviously you see them throw the ball to the sideline and get a new one. So, they as well could be implicated as well. Obviously, they won't be part of the investigation, but obviously they should be, involved in the talks surrounding the whole incident.
Okay. And also, as you say, the teams have their own balls.
Yes.
That's one of the things that makes this sport very different from baseball. In baseball, the umpires handle all the balls and hand them to the teams. Going forward, why doesn't the NFL do that too? The referees have the ball, hand them to the teams. It's not the other way around.
Oh, I completely agree. And obviously, they have meetings that are going to come up next week. Obviously, they're going to be awkward because of the whole investigation. But I think that's going to be one of the biggest points moving forward. It's obviously, it makes no sense whatsoever why they would each be in charge of their own equipment. When we talk about footballs, just like baseball, you said, it's a great point. Just like the NBA, just with the basketballs. I mean, we could bring it to every sport. I mean, they all use the same ball. I don't know why football is so different.
And in the grand scheme of things, yes, Brady is out for four games pending appeal. Yes, the team is fined $1 million and have two draft picks taken away as punishment. But they've been fined in the past. They have had draft picks taken away in the past for Spygate. It hasn't really seemed to hurt them, has it?
No. And that is the underlying statement of why you know, I think everybody, there's a lot of hatred towards New England because it seems like no matter what the circumstance is, what the penalty is, they still find a way to shine. And, I mean, you know, it's, it, even if you look at the appeal, I mean, okay, their first four games, you know, it's Pittsburgh, it's Buffalo, Jacksonville, and Dallas. You know, a lot of prognosticators out there were already going to put them at 3-1. So maybe they go 2-2. So it, essentially they lose one game, and if they're good again this year, like we think they will be, their first-round pick is not going to be a quality player because it's going to be at the end of the first round. So it's exactly what you said. It never hurts them. They always seem to come out on top, and I'm sure somebody will shine at this moment. So.
And what about the old adage we've often heard from many a player and many a coach and or manager in various sports when it comes to cheating, if you ain't cheating, you're not trying.
Yes, that is the statement. And, you know, if you recall, and many listeners may recall, when this first became an issue about two, three months ago, Jerry Rice came out and said, hey, I wore Stick'Em on my gloves all the time to get an extra advantage. So, you know, that's a pretty bold statement by one of the best, if not the best, wide receivers to ever play the game, saying he had one leg up on his competition as well. So it really makes for an interesting case with this whole interesting topic moving forward.
Tony, always a pleasure to talk to you. We'll see how this thing pans out through the course of the season, especially considering you are a fantasy sports expert, and this takes effect of how people even draft. I mean, I'm sure that's going to affect people drafting fantasy sports teams in the next season.
My pleasure.
Fantasy sports expert Tony Cotillo. You can check out his website at fantasysportsaddiction.com, and you can also visit my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0300, and you'll find Tony's link.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to a tech expert about using your technology on vacation. Plus, we'll also discuss the issue of overthinking. Think about that for a while, okay? We also have an idiot of the day coming your way, and of course, lots more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program I also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to Listen to Radio. Let's get back to the stuff, shall we? A woman called for sheriff's deputies in Naples, Florida when they arrived. She told them that she had been in a bar dancing with Jim Carrey in a Batman costume and wanted them to ask the bartender why he threw her out. I think you can pretty well guess. But anyway, deputies told 40-year-old Rachel Austin that she was too drunk to drive. The bartender at Jack's Bait Shack reportedly said Austin had been harassing the men at the bar, so deputies told her that they were going to enforce the ouster. Austin allegedly flicked a lit cigarette at a deputy, hitting him, and started fighting them, screaming that she was mafia and married to a man in the FBI from New York. Wow, she's covering all her bases, isn't she? Deputies were not intimidated by either claim and charged Austin with battery against a law enforcement officer and resisting arrest. Let that be a warning to all of you folks out there. Chemical-induced confidence may not work in the sober world. Okay? An Englishman says a piece of rubber toy that he lost 40 years ago came out of his nose during a sneezing fit. 51-year-old Steve Easton claims he was playing an internet game at his home in Camberley when a sneezing fit prompted the emergence of the object from his nostril. Unsure of what he had found, Easton called his mother, 77-year-old Pat Easton, who told him that the object was the end sucker piece on a toy rubber dart. Now, Pat said that she had decades previously taken Steve, who was then either 7 or 8 years old, to the hospital after he swallowed the toy, but x-rays were inconclusive. All these years later, it suddenly came out, she told the BBC. Steve Easton said his ability to breathe and blow his nose feels no different than before. It's the length of time, he told the BBC. I'm not the first person this has happened to, but 43 years, it's quite a time that it's been in there, isn't it? Now, Easton said he carried the object around to show people who were interested in the story, but he has since disposed of it. Okay, how do you start that conversation with people? Hey, would you like to see something that's been in my nose for over 40 years? I'm surprised he didn't have it bronzed and then was wearing it around his neck on a chain. In the somewhat similar episode of a situation like this back in 2011, by the way, a man who was shot in the head during New Year's Eve festivities in Naples, Italy, sneezed out the .22 caliber bullet as he waited to be seen by a doctor. So, it can happen immediately. It can happen after 43 years. While we're on ammunition and, in some cases, swallowing, after devouring a television remote, a lawnmower, gas filter, and bras, Benno, a 4-year-old Belgian Malinois dog, outdid himself by consuming nearly 24 bullets. He acted like nothing was wrong until he threw up, Benno's owner, who's Larry Brassfield of Mountain Home, Arkansas, said, adding that it was when he discovered a nearly 3-inch-long bullet in the puddle that he was a bit concerned. Brassfield noticed several .308 caliber rounds missing and rushed Benno to a vet where x-rays revealed a small arsenal in the dog's stomach. My first concern was not an explosion, but poisoning, said vet Dr. Sarah Shelton, who feared Benno's stomach acids would attack the metal to fatal effect. Shelton removed 16 cartridges from Benno's stomach and left 2 in his esophagus rather than prolong the 2-hour surgery, correctly calculating that the animal would soon expel them. In all, the dog had eaten 23 rounds. Benno's prognosis is excellent. Malinois dogs, which physically resemble German shepherds, are used as bomb sniffers in Iraq and Afghanistan and are known both for their intelligence and work ethic. Now, Benno, meantime, has diligently returned to his old ways. Since his surgery, Brassfield says, Benno has consumed yet another of his wife's bras. It's at least his 4th, Brassfield said. I'm reminded, after reading this story, of the bull in the Looney Tunes cartoon, Bully for Bugs, who, the one who consumes a rifle, which enables him to fire bullets through his horns. Sometimes life does imitate art. But again, I think we're burying the lead here. What's the deal with this dog eating bras? There's some Freudian therapy needed here, I think. Yeah. And we have time for one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. A Massachusetts police department has a message for citizens. Chasing bears through the woods drunk with a dull hatchet is strongly not advised. Although, you know, that the way it's written, that's kind of bad English because it makes it sound like the bear is the one who's drunk with a dull hatchet. But you know what they mean. Yeah. The North Adams Police Department said in a Facebook posting the incident really did happen, and the hatchet man was taken into protective custody due to his incapacitation from the consumption of alcoholic beverage. The North Adams Police Department is urging everyone to not chase bears through the woods with a dull hatchet drunk, the post said. The post urged residents to steer clear of bears rather than going all Davy Crockett chasing it through the woods drunk with a dull hatchet. It is just a bad idea and it's not going to end well, unquote. Police said they are still working to determine what was the man's plan, what was his end game, and what was he going to do when he caught up with the animal. Oh, I think it's just someone working hard to earn a Darwin Files starter kit. That's what I think. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff All program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? You might be bringing your phone along on your summer vacation, but do you know how to use it while traveling to enhance your trip? Tech expert Chet Davis is here to share some tips that might be of some help. He joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Chet.
Good evening, Peter. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So carrying electronics like a cell phone can be helpful and also can be expensive. I know that you're in the United States. We're up here in Canada. One of the things that's really bad for us folks up here, roaming fees. And I know it's a big thing for other people when they go to, say, Europe and whatnot. So how do you deal with electronics on a trip?
Great question. You know, I think one of the biggest things is, like you say, the connectivity aspect. And I would say there's three basic ways to deal if you want to stay connected while you visit another country. A lot of people, the easiest way, to be honest with you, is go and have Wi-Fi only. So go into airplane mode and then go back in and turn on Wi-Fi. And that way, you're going to be able to connect to the Internet if your hotel, if the restaurant you're visiting, you know, the area where you are, maybe there's a public library, some other hotspot, airports, they allow connectivity so you can get your email, you can log on and check things without worrying about cellular charges. But a lot of people also want to maybe connect back home, and they want the option for people to call them. So one of two ways, I recommend call your cellular provider and check about an international plan that they may offer. Now, most of the telecommunication companies, regardless of what country is your home country, offer a plan that you'll pay X amount of dollars for 30 days of coverage in a specific country. And for a lot of people, that ends up being a peace of mind. So that's a nice thing. The other is you could go with a Wi-Fi or these portable Wi-Fi connectors that give you cellular connection, then you're operating Wi-Fi. So there's a couple different avenues, and I think the best thing, Peter, is that you just kind of plan that out before you get there, because the last thing you want is go abroad and have a great vacation and come back with sticker shock in your next cellular phone bill.
Well, we've been talking about vacations, but what about people who travel a lot, like business folks? Is it possible, for instance, I understand sometimes people swap out SIM cards?
Exactly. So a lot of folks, depending on the model, and if they have most of the later model phones do allow them to swap out the SIM card. And the SIM card, by the way, if it's newer concept to you, SIM, is a little card, and basically that allows your specific telephone device to connect to the local cellular provider. And you can pay as you go. You can have a 30-day account. Some folks, you can even pick them up in airports when you travel abroad. So there are most of the phones sold nowadays as well are what they call world phones that do allow them to go in the different frequencies, if you will, and access the cellular services in a variety of different countries.
Now, I understand there's also, you suggest people could also use their cell phone or their smartphone, actually, as a digital assistant when they go on vacation. How so?
Indeed. In fact, it was just a couple years ago, we spent 30 days in four different countries in Europe, and I stayed totally on Wi-Fi, as I mentioned at the start of our program today. And so I had my family with me, so I didn't have to worry about, you know, reaching back home, and I was off of work, so that was not a concern. But by just staying on Wi-Fi, we were able to access a variety of services. I was able to call out using Skype or another service that uses voice over internet protocol. When I'm abroad, we use it to organize our trip. There's a couple apps. One of my favorite is called TripCase that I can actually email and upload the upcoming agendas, hotel reservations, airline travel information, and it helps me keep track of all that information and kind of plan out my trip. It'll advise me if there's a change to the local hotel. I also like to use a notes app, and some people go very specific, and there's a couple of diary-related apps for traveling, but it helps me keep track because I know sometimes I'll have a great deal of fun, especially if it's multiple days, and I may have forgot the name of that fabulous restaurant down on the River Seine. And so by just putting a note in there, oh, yeah, what was that fabulous meal that we had? And what was the name of that bottle of wine? And you know, just to help to rekindle those memories from the vacation. I also like to shoot a lot of photos. So by having those notes, I can put together a nice slideshow when I get back home.
You just mentioned an app, and that's one of the things people can do before they go on vacation. They could find some decent apps that will help them with their trip or even planning their trip.
Excellent point. Regardless of the platform that you use, whether you're on Android or iOS, go into the App Store and do a search for the apps. And I like to pick ones that are fairly high rated. But I don't just go by the ratings; I go by the comments too, because sometimes you just want to trust more than just a 5-star rating, and get a sense of the kinds of comments and the kinds of things people use. One of the other kinds of apps that I like to use as well, Peter, is a Maps app. You can actually use a Maps app without using cellular while you're abroad, but the one thing you want to pay attention to before you leave is locate a Maps app that allows you to download the map for the location you're visiting ahead of time. One of the big dangers are if you're using, for example, Google Maps and you're abroad, well, as it's downloading all that data, there's a huge amount of cellular charge you're going to incur. But a lot of the Maps apps allow you to download the map before you travel, and then it just uses the GPS tool to locate where you are on the map that's already inside of your device.
Are there different apps that you recommend based on where you might be traveling to, or are all the apps basically global?
There are some of the big travel companies like Fodors and Frommers. They have their own series of apps, and they tend to be pretty good. When we were traveling to Croatia a couple years ago, I researched a number of apps, and I was, some of them I thought were nice. Some of the other ones I thought, the local Chamber of Commerce or Visitors Bureau, and I know why they're doing it, but they're not really rich with information. It was more just kind of another way to get themselves out there. And I don't blame them, but again, for me, a traveler, it was of very little value. So check on those before you leave. Download some of them, and you can even download a lot of them are free. Some of them will have in-app purchases, but you can get a feel by navigating through them a little bit before you leave home. If you're traveling in the U.S., for example, there are a number of apps for each of the national parks, and perhaps there are for Canada as well, and I apologize my naivete there, but I find those really rich because there's local information, there's map information, they give me information about, the hours, visiting information. I find those pretty rich as well.
Now, you're a tech guy, and as a matter of fact, your website is yourtechnologytutor.com. So are there times when, especially when going on vacation, when you say, put the technology down?
Most definitely. I'm so glad you asked that. That's so important. I think what's important is that you're using technology as a tool while you travel. The tech doesn't become your travels. It doesn't become your trip. I was just in downtown San Francisco today, and I noticed I have to sometimes intentionally put my phone in my pocket and walk about and enjoy what we're viewing. And so many other people walk around with their eyes transfixed on the glass. And it's so important, especially when you go abroad and you're enjoying these times, make sure you put it away and pull it out when it's appropriate, when you're using it as an assistant. And this can be a challenge, too, if you travel with younger people, with teens, and they perhaps have their own technology. But to make sure you kind of set out ahead of time, maybe with your own rules ahead of time, say, okay, here's a point in time when we're going to take out our phones, especially if you're traveling with friends or with your loved ones. Kind of intentionally go about that. So like you said, it doesn't take over the trip. It really enhances where you're about.
Now, I mentioned your website, yourtechnologytutor.com. What will people find when they go there?
Well, there's a variety of information pointing to some of my upcoming classes, workshops. I have an upcoming book dealing with using technology securely. But you can also sign up. There's a sign-up form, and I do a monthly email newsletter. There's no obligation. I'd be happy to share that with the listeners today.
Okay. And when you just mentioned something, you said security. Is security with your smartphone something that you should be concerned with when you travel?
I would say a couple quick things in that regard. One is never let it leave your possession, especially when you're in some international airports. Make sure it stays in your carry-on luggage. Never pack your technology in luggage that's to be checked. Always keep it, you know, within eyesight to the degree that you possibly can. The other thing is when you're using Wi-Fi, if you're using a Wi-Fi network, I recommend adjusting the settings in your smartphone or maybe your tablet, your computer, so that you're only using trusted networks. And what that means is if you're going to go onto Wi-Fi, you have to manually check or click or approve that particular site, because there are some rogue individuals that could set up a Wi-Fi network that will actually fish or scam and pull information. So if, for example, you're checking your bank account from abroad, they could be accessing the website, your login credentials, the password, and get right in there as well and access that same pot of money.
Mm. When one very last quick question dealing with security, and that is when you go to a hotel, for instance, and even though they have Wi-Fi, if you can, do you prefer to be hardwired?
Boy, you know, I'm pretty careful about what I do when I'm on public Wi-Fi. For example, some folks will say, you know, don't go into those security areas. Don't go in and check your bank account when you're on an untrusted Wi-Fi. Some people as well, Peter, are getting their own VPN circuit, which is a virtual private network, and that actually allows you, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 to $30 U.S. per year, that allows you to have essentially a pipeline or a tunnel that's protected between your device, even if you're on a public Wi-Fi network, and their dedicated server. So if you travel a lot in areas that may be more prone to questionable behaviors, that would be a wise investment.
Good advice indeed. Again, people can check out your website, which is yourtechnologytutor.com. Chet, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Welcome. I really appreciate the opportunity. Safe travels, everyone.
Tech expert Chet Davis. Again, his website is yourtechnologytutor.com. You can also go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0300, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Actually, it's the 300th edition of Let's Be Fair, so I'd like to say thank you to all the stations that carry this commentary and to those of you listening, especially those who have taken the time to share your own ideas and stories with us. 300 weeks ago, we started out with the goal of revealing how lawsuit abuse affects consumers, communities, businesses, and families, and we haven't run out of stories yet. Because even if you're fortunate enough never to be sued individually, the communities we live in, the organizations we belong to, and the places we work at have all been affected by the excessive amount of litigation in America. Let's be fair. Even though we often point out when the court system isn't working, we also know that we live in a country that attracts people from around the world because we have the freest society on earth. Working together, we can raise awareness of how the courts can better protect that freedom by cracking down on lawsuit abuse. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org. And from all of us here, thanks for listening.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File. Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about overthinking. Plus, we will indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments. But I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you before we get to our next guest here on our program. I also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, in New York City, someone can be fired for being too nice. Suspicions confirmed. 41-year-old doorman Ralph Boddy was dismissed from his job at an upscale New York City apartment building because he did too many favors for tenants, according to an April New York Post report. Boddy said he gave his life to the residents at the 27 on 27th. That's a tower in Queens. But upper management thought such extra kindness violated building policy and ordered his dismissal despite a tenant petition. So you see, Mom was right. no good deed goes unpunished. You know, I think the upper management of that swanky apartment building is overthinking things, which is a subtle segue to our last guest on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Dr. Paul Coleman says that as a society, we're all overthinking things. Over 70% of people aged 25 to 35 compulsively overthink. So why is this? And more importantly, how do we change it? Dr. Coleman is the author of Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces, and he joins us on the line right now from New York State. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for taking the time to do this with us. So that age group, 25 to 35, are compulsively overthinking. When I see that age group, an idea comes to mind, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong. I think back to when that age group were kids. They were basically the first generation whose parents overscheduled everything. They didn't go out to play. They went on scheduled play dates.
I love that way of thinking because I think that's a big part of it. It wasn't like when I was a child and we didn't have anything scheduled. We just played. We went outside and played. The other thing is technology. We're used to having a lot of instant gratification. We're always on our phones and our computers. And it's all about thinking, and it's not about being.
Well, as we mentioned, since it is something that goes back to possibly to childhood, is it something that we can retrain? In other words, how do we change it and stop overthinking?
Well, you're right. And it's not just childhood. I think we're kind of hardwired. If we lived in a culture that lived on an island in the Pacific and we, you know, fished and swam and had coconuts and things like that, we would not be overthinkers, right? But in our culture, we have to think about everything. We plan everything. We anticipate everything. The problem is when we overthink, what we start to do is we elevate non-essential information, less important information, to the status of something that's more important, and then we hesitate to make decisions and we slow down our ability to actually make efficient progress in our lives. So when we want to change that, part of what we have to do is we have to begin to tolerate uncertainty. People who overthink are very anticipating the future, and they want to have answers. They want to know the outcome. They want to know what are they getting and when are they getting it. And we have to tolerate more uncertainty. And the more we can just say, I accept uncertainty right now, I don't know where this is going, or I'm worried about the future, but I accept that I don't have the answers right now, we can pause the overthinking.
Does the media play into this a little bit? And the reason why I say that, I'm a tail-end baby boomer. So needless to say, I am someone whose parents and my entire generation's parents had a lot of kids. And they just dealt with the idea of having children. But nowadays, you look in magazines, newspapers, television, online, there are all these articles about how to be a proper parent, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong. When parents before just we're parents. That's just one aspect. Are we overthinking that as well and everything else in our lives?
Yes. We have the 24-hour news cycle. We have all kinds of magazines and publications, and they have to create ways for people to want to buy their product or read their look at their advertisers. So they get people thinking about everything, and they make us have a lot of self-doubt because we want to know for sure, are we doing the right thing? And we can never know for sure. If we're honest with ourselves and we try our best, things will probably work out. And if we make a mistake, we can correct it. But when we say, no, I have to be absolutely sure that my child, you know, succeeds and gets to here and gets in the best colleges, we're going to overthink it. And we are going to add to the stress of our lives and our children's lives in that case and not necessarily have the gains that we were hoping for.
We've often been taught that we learn from our mistakes, and yet it seems to be that we can say that in theory, but not in practice. And by that, I mean people are afraid to make mistakes. Is that part of not judging or trusting our own, for lack of a better term, intuition?
Yes, I think that's part of it. People are afraid of what people think of them. That's one of the biggest disorders we have is what do people think, the WPTs. And it paralyzes us because we want to make sure that people are going to view us as successful or capable, or we don't want to fail. But the truth is we have to fail. We have to make mistakes so we can find out what's the better route to take. And if you're petrified of making a mistake or failing, you will not give it your all in a way that you need to, and you're likely to then stagger along and sputter along rather than make headway. People who overthink always procrastinate.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Interesting. So how do we change this? You mentioned technology is part of the problem. Is it simply shutting down technology for a while, or is it something deeper from within?
You have to, there's a, shutting down technology would help, but I don't know that people are willing to do that. If you have a lot of overthinking and worrying about the future, I'll tell you one thing that doesn't work, and that's talking about it. That seems to actually make it worse because people will give you their opinions on your thoughts and you're just going to yes but them, and you're actually going to keep it going. So part of it is recognizing that it's not the content that's the problem. Whatever you're worried about isn't the problem. It's how are you processing your information. And if you're processing information in an over-functioning way, that is the problem. It's like, imagine, ever run down a flight of stairs when you're really in a hurry, and you're fine. Imagine if you had to think about what you were doing every step of the way. Where are your muscles going? Where's your foot going now? You would slow down, or you'd trip and fall. And that's what people do when they start to overthink.
I've heard the same analogy used for people who are learning to be waiters. You can carry a full tray of drinks if you don't think about it.
Yes, that's true. And a cup of coffee. I was a waiter, and I remember I'd always spill the coffee, and I'd hold it on a cup, and it would always spill over into the cup, the saucer, I mean, and because I was looking at it. If I just walked with it and didn't bother to look at it, it would be fine.
Very interesting indeed. I mentioned earlier your book is called Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, it's a book that talks about the journey that we go on when there's been a major life upheaval. It could be you've been a divorce, you have a health crisis, somebody close to you passed on, and your life is never going to be quite the same. And I say you're going to come up on this journey into four paths of transformation or their counterparts. And if you go on the counterparts, you're going to get stuck. If you go on the four pathways, you can actually get to a place, despite the pain of loss, where you're actually looking at the world from a higher perspective, and you can come away transformed. And sometimes overthinking is part of the problem when you've gone through a loss. You're always thinking about the past, or you're always thinking about the regrets, and you're never getting to the next phase of your life that can still be meaningful.
So like we've been discussing earlier, it seems to be it's not necessarily the problems in your life, but how one deals with them.
Yes, how you interpret the problems, how you process it through your filter. We all have filters through every problem, you know. So you might have a great idea of something you want to do, and then how does it get processed? Well, your first thought might be, well, what are other people going to think about me if I do this? Are they going to laugh at me? Are they going to be excited? Or you're going to process, what's it going to cost me? Is it going to take a lot of time? Is it going to take money? You know, and what if I fail? And if you process it through those and you get stuck there, you're not going to go after whatever it was that might have been a great idea and very important to do.
It's like your doubts are almost becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes, because what you're really asking for when you're doubting is, I want a clear path. I want to get rid of all the potential obstacles, and then I will go forth. And the famous writer and teacher Joseph Campbell said, if you can see your path laid out in front of you all perfectly, it's not your path.
Yeah, and that would also be, in a way, in retrospect, a kind of a boring trip.
Well, that's true, but that's what people do. They want to make sure that it's going to all work out, and then they'll go on the trip, and that's not life.
most interesting indeed. Again, your book is Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces. Dr. Paul, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
It was delightful. Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Paul Coleman, author of Finding Peace When Your Heart Is in Pieces. His website is peacefulbook.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0300, and you'll find the link to his site, plus links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
There probably weren't too many leads after a break-in at the Gambell Native Store warehouse in the village of Gambell, Alaska. Thieves stole 5 cases of frozen pizzas, each with 16 pies worth about $1,100. What police called their strongest investigative lead came later when John Kuzana, age 29, and Louis Uzeva, age 21, called the village police department and offered to sell frozen pizzas to the on-duty officers. Police recovered 75 of the 80 stolen pizzas. I guess those two guys ate the other 5 themselves. And the 2 men were arrested for burglary. Okay, so I have to ask, why would you steal cases of pizza and then turn around and try to sell them to the police? One reason, and one reason only: you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0300. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0300. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. A tape of the preceding program will be sent to the Radio Hall of Fame, where it will be placed under the statue of Marconi, which is kind of wobbly.